Hey, it's Scott Petrak with another episode of the Browns Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns lost 36-19 to the Rams on Sunday, completing a 9-day trip out west with an 0-2 record. The Browns have lost two straight for the first time this season, but are 7-5, still in a wild card spot, and may have found their quarterback for the stretch run in Joe Flacco. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go to WKYC Morning News and filling in sports a couple days this week. What's up, Chud?
That's right. If Joe Flacco can come back, I can come back to sports. No question. Yeah, filling in. We're taping this Tuesday afternoon. I did sports on Monday, doing it again today. And, yeah, it's weird. I mean, gosh, 11 years in the sports department, leave for the morning show. Been doing that for 5 years. So it's definitely weird. I mean, flipping my schedule and going back and doing, you know, what I – was brought up doing, you know, sports sure. department for sure. So yeah, definitely interesting. But Scott, good to have you back on the East Coast. Now, did you sit in the press box or were you hanging out with LeBron and Machine Gun Kelly?
Yeah, no, I was in the press box, Chuck. I did not get that invitation.
Because I know you hang out with the elite when you go on the road. So
well, I think Joe Flacco's elite, right? Wasn't that the argument forever? I talked to him on the road a little bit.
There you go. High tracking Flacco.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what,
it's cool out in L.A., though, buddy. I'd never been there.
Yeah, was it?
It's fun.
Good time?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of work, but, yeah, I got to look at the ocean for a little bit, walk around UCLA. It was good. The weather is great.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I talked with, you know, Sean that works at Channel 3.
Yeah.
He said he was right by you the whole time. He said the weather was outstanding. I saw him. He got in late last night when I was there after the 11 o'clock, and he said the traffic was brutal, though.
Yeah, that's – I only drove a couple places. So, it caught up to us once. I was jealous of Sean. I think he got a round of golfing. I did not get a round of golfing.
Oh, okay. All right, well. I thought you'd find a way to sneak it in, but oh, well.
Yeah, it's working too hard, Chud.
Yeah. Well – we have a lot of things to break down. We're going to get to Trevor Lawrence. I think that's going to be one of the hottest things we talk about on this podcast. Obviously, you got hurt last night. We'll get to that. But I think before we get to that, let's, you know, just talk about the game. We're just, you know, just 2 days removed from that. And I think for me, and obviously I got it wrong. I picked the Browns. You got it right. You picked the Rams. So we're back to tied up their predictions, but this isn't about us. This is about the Browns. But I think the main thing I want to say is hot topics for me. Obviously we're going to get to Flacco. We're going to get to the defense. There's a lot of things we're going to get to, but Scott, this is what I forgot about. And I don't know if I forgot about it, but I forgot to put it more into my analyzation of the game is just how much different of a team they're on the road than when they're at home.
Yeah. And Chad, early in the year, somebody mentioned it to me. And especially defensively, right? And I just missed it. It had been like a game or two. I was like, you know, they played well in Pittsburgh in the, you know, week two in the first road game. Gave up that long touchdown to Pickens. Other than that, they played well. But then I think the next game was the Indianapolis game, and it didn't play well. The defense didn't play well. And now there's like a string, like a trend, maybe more than a trend. It's a history of the defense not playing as well on the road. And now, it's not awful. You know, 399 yards is not good, which is what they gave up to the Rams. But it's 20 points midway through the fourth quarter. Then there's a couple of field position issues, right? The interception returned to the 24, I think. And then they go for it on fourth down and get stopped. And that leads to another short field and a touchdown. So the final score is skewed. But that doesn't change the fact that the Browns just haven't been nearly as good and just not nearly as dominant, right? At home, they've been dominant, the defense. On the road, that's not the case. And, you know, we asked a bunch of guys last week, and, you know, part of it is you don't have the energy of the home crowd. Part of it is you don't have the noise, right, when the other team's trying to snap. So they might have to go silent count. There's a better get-off for your pass rushers. When the Browns are on the road, it's quiet. They can change cadence. You can get a guy. You have to worry about jumping off sides. You're step slower. But you know, those don't seem to me like they should be giant factors. But apparently they are. And you know, they're dealing with a couple of injuries. Denzel Ward hasn't played the last two games. Miles Garrett played a bunch. What didn't seem quite the same. Although I'm rewatching it, and he looks kind of healthy. The Rams just did a good job of trying to take him out of the game. But it's you're right. It's been enough. We have enough examples where it's not just a blip. It's something that they're going to have to correct because they're going to go on the road a couple more times this year, and they're going to need to win some games.
Now, do you think it's as simple as just saying, hey, if you have Denzel Ward out there and you have Myles Garrett 100%, that that solves the problem, or do you think it goes beyond that?
I think it goes beyond. That's a huge part, and especially Denzel Ward. They've missed Denzel Ward the last 2 weeks, and just a couple of big plays in the Rams game, the 70-yard touchdown for Nacua. You know, maybe Denzel's closer in coverage there, and he doesn't beat, I don't know if there's zone there, but, you're missing your best cover corner. And then there's a 30-yard play to DeMarcus Robinson on 2nd and 20, and Mike Ford Jr. is in the game instead of Denzel Ward. It looks like he misses a jam at the line of scrimmage. They're playing cover two, and then gets caught with Matthew Stafford, the Rams quarterback, looks short right, and Ford kind of pauses and lets DeMarcus Robinson get behind him. Well, first of all, Denzel Ward probably doesn't miss the jam. They might be playing man there because you have your best cover corner. But even if you're playing zone, he's probably smart enough and experienced enough that he drops deeper because it is 2nd and 20. Let him complete a pass underneath, come up and make a tackle. Instead, Ford pauses, lets the guy get behind him. It's a 30-yard completion. They score two plays later, score a touchdown. So I think you do miss Denzel Ward for sure. I don't think it's as simple as that. There's, the pass rush hasn't been what it had been, the last couple of weeks. Myles Garrett does not get the help that he did up front earlier. There's some big plays. Like, that's, to me, the thread through all the struggles on the road defensively is they're giving up big plays. And that, I just wouldn't blame that on Denzel Ward. Maybe it's just bad luck. You get caught in a bad call, right? The 70-yarder, Jim Schwartz had both safeties at the line of scrimmage. Stafford audible, and then they got beat. So, that's just a good play call. They've run up against two really good play callers and two really good quarterbacks the last 2 weeks. I think that plays into it. So there's a lot of factors. I don't think it means the defense is garbage. I don't think it means the defense can't be dominant again as long as Ward and Garrett are healthy. But I don't think it's quite as simple as just saying they don't have Denzel Ward.
Yeah, they've been giving up big plays all year long. And when I made my prediction for them to win, I said the defense would step up. And, it's kind of like last week how you felt after you got your pick wrong. That's how I feel after I got my pick wrong. It's how you feel, after the game, after you see it play out, and you're disappointed because what I hoped they would do, what I predicted they would do, they couldn't do it. So I'm skewed now.
Right. I know you got to get past that, but it takes a while.
Yeah, you're right. So, Mary Kay Cabot brought up last night on The Point After, which I did yesterday in the 7 o'clock news on Channel 3. I brought the defense up to her, and she brought up a good point, and she mentioned how, a lot of the games where the defense has been dominant weren't against some of the more elite quarterbacks in the NFL, and they've struggled when they've played some of the better ones.
Yeah, she's been talking about that for a while, and I fought her on that because I didn't think the sample size was big enough, and I think you can only play who you go against, right? It's not their fault Joe Burrow had a bum calf, and they played great against Joe Burrow. They played great against in week two, but it is Kenny Pickett, right? So, I think I'm kind of torn on this because I think you play who you play and you dominate. And if you dominate, you dominate. Like, you can't take that away just because they played Clayton Tune with the Cardinals, right? Like, that doesn't, to me, diminish what was a historic performance, right? They gave up 58 yards total offense. But you can't just throw out the fact that the last 2 weeks they played good quarterbacks and gave up yardage, right? I mean, against Russell Wilson, it was only 162 passing yards, right? It gives 269 total yards. Like, that's not like a huge game, right? The offense didn't do many favors that game with the takeaways. Matthew Stafford got him for 327. 240 passing. 240 passing. I'm looking at the Browns. 399. Last week, Russell Wilson only threw for 125. But they gave up 169 on the ground. Lamar, they beat Lamar in Baltimore. That was a good performance. You know, Geno Smith, Gardner Minshew, they both had decent days on the road. You know, I think part of it is good quarterbacks and really good quarterbacks, they're good against a lot of defenses, right? It's tough to shut those guys down. You get a good play caller in Sean McVay and Sean Payton. You get a good quarterback, like, you're going to give up some yards. So I kind of go back and forth. I don't think it's like they're only good against bad quarterbacks. I think just by nature, you're going to give up more yards to good quarterbacks. But, you know, we did talk a little about, hey, is this, you know, a historic defense? Is these the 85 Bears? They're not. And we know that for sure now. They're not. Now, it doesn't mean they can't bottle that for a week or two. But they're going to have to show me a lot more over these final five games to kind of raise my opinion of them back to where it was a couple of weeks ago, if that makes sense.
Well, how many times did I bring that up to you early in the year?
Right.
I mean, many times. Many times. I'm hanging my hat on that one. Now, when they do play well, though, what a difference it is. So, you know, like you said, they don't necessarily have to be elite or championship level, but they can be close to that. But they're going to have to be, I think, here the rest of the way out. Man, so many different.
I'm sorry, Chad. They're going to have to be better, right? Obviously, like you said. And I do think it's important to remember that this is a long season, and the numbers tend to average out over a long season. So they're still first in the league in defense. They're still first in the league in passing defense, right? Like, they give up 279 to Stafford, and then it's 125, 77, 200 to Lamar, 17, 248, 288, 107. Like, they haven't given up 300 yards passing yet this season. So while it wasn't great last week and 279 is too many, you know, you do have to take a little bit of a longer view. So in 2023, they have the best yardage defense and the best yardage passing defense. It hasn't been perfect. It still needs to be better, and you need to be better against everyone. But it's not bad. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like prisoner of the moment, oh my gosh, this defense, well, it's really still really good.
Yeah, enjoy the process. It's better than most defenses we've had. And, you know, go from there. So, Well, that's a lot of talk on the defense. Let's move on to Joe Flacco now. Surprised we waited this long, but to me, the defense was the top story in the game because they lost. Had they won, Flacco would be the top story.
Yeah.
And now, Scott, I ask you, will Joe Flacco be the starting quarterback this Sunday?
He better be, Chad. And I expect him to, right? I think Kevin Stefanski was, you know, Kevin Stefanski gets it after the game. And I understand after the game, you don't want to say anything. He gets it Monday. I understand a little bit less why he doesn't want to answer. But there's reasons. You know, Dorian Thompson-Robinson is still in concussion protocol. You know, so maybe you want that information. Maybe you just want to sit down and talk to DTR and Joe Flacco before you make the move. You want to re-sit down with your coaches before you announce it publicly. And any delay in letting the Jaguars know who's the starting quarterback could be beneficial, right? If they have to prepare for Flacco and DTR, those are two different type of quarterbacks, right? So if there's any doubt in their mind about who the starter is, why not let that doubt linger? But there's no way it should not be Joe Flacco. He should be the starter. And I am convinced that Kevin Stefanski will go that route. He just threw it too well. I think he opens up the offense. I mean, we talked the last couple of weeks, right, about when DTR is in there, the field shrinks, right? The defense is compressed. It's harder to run. Defenses aren't scared. They put bigger bodies in there to stop the run. And it took Joe Flacco one drive for you to go, okay, well, defenses can't play him the same way. Because he can throw it over the top. He can throw it to the sideline. It creates more space, which will be better for the run game. And we saw that start in the second half. First half, the Browns didn't run it. Second half, they did. And I think that's a direct correlation to adjustments the Rams made, because now they realized they had to protect against Flacco throwing the ball. So, it has to be him. It should be him. It should be him until he struggles for an extended period or he gets hurt. Otherwise, it's Joe Flacco. And, you know, I wrote this the other day, Chud, and we probably talked about it. It felt like when they signed him to the practice squad November 20th, that eventually he would get a chance, right? And you're kind of looking at the calendar, when's it going to be? And part of that was, well, if DTR struggles, then Flacco takes over, right? When DTR gets hurt, it just expedited things, sped up the process, And now he's in there. And when he played the way he did, it just affirms to me that if you're going to get to the playoffs and you're going to hope for anything to happen in the playoffs, it's got to be with Joe Flacco as your quarterback. As crazy as that would have sounded, you know, a month ago, 6 months ago, 8 months ago.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I go back to what I said last week about if DTR was healthy, I could see where Stefanski maybe would want to go with him because he's his guy now. But I've thought more about that, and now that we've seen visually that Flacco can do it, because there was concern. Every expert, we talked about it last week, we didn't know for sure how he would do. But now that we saw what he did, and I started thinking about this more, it's not like DTR is your starting quarterback, right? I mean, it's Watson. So it's not like you're not going back. He's a rookie, and you can explain to him, hey, you need to learn more. You need to watch the process. You can learn a lot by watching Flacco. So I have no problem at all sticking with Flacco. We all saw what he did, and we know he gives this team the best chance.
Correct. And there are doubts about Flacco, and this is not to say that he's going to be great and he's going to win five in a row and lead him to the Super Bowl, right? We don't know right. how that's going to play out. But what we did see, like, we knew he could throw it. Like, I don't think that ever went away. He knew he could throw it. He said he could throw it. We saw it in week two last year when he threw those two touchdowns to beat the Browns with the Jets. But at 38, with a long layoff, right, he hadn't been on any team this year, he had to show that he could still process quickly and maybe even more important because he's smart, right? You would think that he could still do that. He had to have the ability to move enough. And he's never going to run for a bunch of yards. He's never going to be an escape guy in the pocket. But they ran a bunch of play action with him and a bunch of play action rollouts. And he had to prove that he could do that. And he did. And he was successful. He threw it while he was moving a little bit. I thought he showed you everything you needed to, including that kind of like explosiveness, right? The ability to take that first step and get moving on those rollouts, on those bootlegs, that you match that up with the arm, and that's what the Browns need to run the offense Kevin Stefanski wants to run. And it's back to being that offense in 2020 and 21, right? A lot of the play action, a lot of under center. It's a pretty big switch from what they did with Deshaun Watson, just because their styles are so different as quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I want to put something into perspective. I said this on the air yesterday, and it's kind of my opinion, but, you know, Flacco, for us, it's an upgrade because of what we're dealing with. I mean, we're on to our fourth starting quarterback. Now, people might wonder, why hasn't Flacco in the NFL, why hasn't he been playing, or, you know, why was he still available, or this or that, but let's be honest, if it was the Bills or the Chiefs or the 49ers or the Eagles or teams like that, they wouldn't be as excited about Joe Flacco coming in.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah, right. Look who he's replacing. Yeah, I'll give you that. But as you watch all these quarterbacks get hurt across the league, right? And we're going to talk about Trevor Lawrence, and we watch Jake Browning have a great game on Monday night for the Bengals in place of Joe Burrow. You know, you look at what's going on with the Giants. Like, Joe Flacco is good enough to be in this league, right? So it's probably salary. It's probably age, why teams don't have him on the roster. But at the level we are in the NFL, right, Joe Flacco's an NFL quarterback right now at 38. So there's other factors. It's whether or not he thought he wanted a chance to start, and that's where he would sign. It's whether or not the team just decided to go young, right? It's cheaper to go with a young quarterback. You know, you like it. You want to develop a guy, and the Browns did that with, you know, DTR. But watching Joe Flacco yesterday, right? I mean, is he, not to jump too far ahead, but is he better than C.J. Beathard, who's going to replace, or who replaced Trevor Lawrence when he got hurt last night? I think you can make that argument, you know. So it's just interesting how teams decide to build their quarterbacks. But you're right. I mean, yeah. Where is he? You know, is he capable of replacing Patrick Mahomes and being the same player? No. Right. If Josh Allen gets hurt, man, Joe Flacco is a huge drop off. But the Browns have had the worst quarterback playing in the league, right, all season long. Despite Deshaun Watson having a couple of good games before he got hurt, the Browns had the worst passer rating in the league. And it wasn't really that close before the Rams game. So That you're right about that. So it's if he plays well, it's a jump, even though they're 7-5, because of what he's replacing. Although you have to factor in the, you know, Deshaun Watson was starting to play well. You could see where you thought this team could go, and that's why that was devastating. But given the other options, it's clearly Joe Flacco.
Yeah. I got a text from someone this morning, Scott. They're like, what's with the Flacco onto the practice squad?
Yeah, well, I mean, eventually that'll change, and we knew that from the jump. It's nowadays, that's one of the things, and I think it's directly related to COVID, and they just like the change and haven't, and they're going to keep it. With the expanded practice squad, you can put more guys there, number one. They've relaxed the rules about the veterans that you can have on the practice squad, and that helps, right? Like, I mean, the Browns could make – they're going to have to activate him at some point to the active roster. But just the fact that they elevated him Saturday for Sunday's game means you don't have to cut somebody, right? And, you know, all these roster spots are precious. If you get the injuries pile up, you need all your guys. So eventually they're going to have to cut somebody. Now, like, they could decide to cut P.J. Walker and bring him back on the practice squad perhaps. You know, maybe they cut a backup offensive lineman, whatever. But it does give you the flexibility that, you know, I think the average fan, you know, doesn't care about. But I know Andrew Berry, the GM, does, right? I think it's a handy tool for him.
Yeah. Anything else on Flacco before I ask you some other things about the game?
No, I think we covered it. I you know, I'm sure I got this point across, but I was just really impressed by him and how well he threw it. And I think that does provide hope for the rest of the season, because if he plays like that and limits his turnovers, right? He had the one big one. And I'm glad it dawned on me. Like, that's a bad turnover. That interception, crucial part of the game. He tried to force it, take a shot. There's two underneath guys recovered. He should have thrown it out of bounds or tucked it and scrambled for a couple yards. Huge play in the game. You're going to get a little of that with him because he trusts his arms so much. But he needs to protect the ball. But if he protects the ball and throw it like he did Sunday, which I believe he'll continue to throw it that way because he always has, that's going to give this team a chance. And if the defense plays better and they can run it a little better, which they should with the space created, like, that's the recipe. They're still going to be tight games. You know, they're still going to have to play well. Like, things are going to have to go their way, get a couple of breaks. But I think he gives them that chance.
Scott, bottom line, and you said this too, when you predicted them to lose, you said, don't panic. It would be okay. You're still all right. And I agree with you. I think it's not the end of the world that they lost this game. It certainly would have helped. It would have been a lot better, but they're still okay.
7-5. The schedule's not that hard. It's easier if you don't have Trevor Lawrence to play against Jacksonville, right, on Sunday. Yeah, they're still in the sixth spot in the wild card race. Yeah, Chad, I think it's still there. 0-2 is rough. You got to get out of this downward spiral, right? And I don't know if it's too much to call it a downward spiral. It's only two losses. But first time they lost two, you can't let it become three, because the bigger it gets, the harder it is to turn that ship around. But it's 7-5. The schedule they have, some optimism at quarterback. I do think they're still fine, and I think they believe that they're still fine.
All right, Scott, a few more things here before we get on to the Jags. You got a fun McVay story, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it was funny. A couple of us were walking out of a post-game interview room, and there's this, you know, it's a giant tunnel under the stadium, and all of a sudden somebody's like, hey, get out of the way, get out of the way. And we're walking kind of right next to Miles Garrett, and this, like, Escalade stops, rolls down the window, and it's McVay, and he's getting driven out, and he reaches, like, kind of leans over, and he says to Miles, hey, I want you to know that you ruined my bleeping week just worrying about you. And then Miles reached in the car and, like, they shook hands or whatever. And then McVay drove away, and then Miles got a cart and drove away. But I just thought it was funny because, you know, Miles didn't have a sack. He didn't have a tackle for the first time, at least this season. And I'm rewatching it, and they just pay so much attention to him. So you know that that's true. You know Garrett ruins every opposing coaches and play callers week. But McVay did a good job concentrating enough guys and then running. He ran a bunch of plays the other direction to just neutralize, you know, Miles Garrett and the impact that he can have on a game.
Yeah, no doubt. It's kind of like what Belichick does to the star offensive player on the other side.
Right, right. Takes him out of the game.
Yeah. Well, not a fun story has been the injuries. And obviously, we don't, you know, Garrett's not 100%. We talked about Denzel Ward, Amari Cooper, first ribs, now concussion.
Yeah, and that's a big one. You know, it's too early to tell if he'll be able to play Sunday against the Jaguars. It's so hard with the concussion. Nowadays, it's tough to clear in a week. We'll find out, I'm sure, as we go along this week. But they missed him when he went out, and they're going to miss him if he has to, you know, if he doesn't play this week. He's so valuable to that offense. And we've talked about it before, Chud, the maybe lack of big-time depth in that receiving core, right? We've talked about, should they trade for a guy? Should they add a guy? Then they trade Donovan Peoples-Jones at the deadline. So you're down to Cooper. So if he doesn't play, it's Elijah Moore. It's the rookie Cedric Tillman. It's David Bell. Maybe Marquise Goodwin comes back. He's missed the last month with the concussion. You got Austin Watkins Jr. on the practice squad. And then it's a lot more tight ends. So you need, I think if Cooper doesn't play, you need Elijah Moore and you need David Njoku to really step up. And then next behind them would be Cedric Tillman, because you got to give Joe Flacco options. Now, the good thing is Flacco completed passes to 9 receivers. So that shows that he can run the offense. He can look for the open guy. He's not locked in on one specific player. But when you're losing your best guy and the other team knows it ahead of time, that means they're going to change things up. And then it becomes a lot more about scheme than player, right? Kevin Spence likes to say, hey, I call a play for the player, like the guy's going to beat somebody. Well, you know, then it becomes you got to scheme guys open because you don't trust your receivers, you know, to beat man-to-man coverage or just to beat coverage. You know, I'm looking at the depth chart, James Prochet II, right, the punt returner. He's another option, but he hasn't been here long. He hasn't played a ton of receivers. So they would miss Cooper, and they would need Elijah Moore and David Njoku to really have an impact.
Let me ask you this. Have we talked about this yet, this nugget, how many touchdowns the Browns have to their wide receivers this year?
I don't think we have, Chuck. It's not many, is it?
It's 3.
Yeah.
3. I mean, I think it's 2 Amari and 1 for Elijah, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking up right now. Stefanski was asked about that the other day and said, we don't care where they come from, right, as long as they come. But, you know, the passing game has struggled all year. And we can argue whether or not that's the receivers or the quarterback, right? And it's a little chicken in the egg argument. And I would start with the quarterbacks. If the quarterbacks just haven't been good enough, right, consistent enough. But, you know, you need to help them, right? Jerome Ford's got 3 touchdowns. Harrison Bryant's got 3. Njoku 2. Then those are running back, tight end. Yeah, and then it's Cooper 2 and Moore 1. So you need more production from the passing game. And I think it's fair to say that starts with the receivers. So, yeah, it's certainly worth noting, no doubt about it.
Real quick before we move on to the Jags, you want to hit on that false start from the Rams game?
Yeah, it's just interesting to me, Chud. First of all, it's a pivotal play. It came after the interception, Rams score, so they're up 8. But that's only one score game, right? One possession game. There's, you know, 3-plus minutes left, I want to say. And it's third. They run it. It's 3rd and 1. They go to the line, less than 3rd and 1, and as a matter of fact. And Ethan Postick, the center, gets called for false start, moving the ball forward. It's the second straight week that he's been hit with that false start, both in short yardage. Kevin Stefanski, we know that he's even keel, right? Doesn't get fired up very often, and that's a complaint people have. Well, I went back and watched a TV copy, and I could see some of this live too. And he is furious at that call. There's F-bombs coming out. In fact, he challenged, like, the first play the Rams got when they got the ball back, he challenged and just yelled at the officials about the false start. Like, I think he challenged just so he could have more time to argue with the officials. So I asked him after the game about it, and he said very frustrated, and he went on a long explanation, and usually he doesn't criticize the officials in public, but this is how important it was to him, and not only a pivotal part in the game, but he said there's officials are on alert because when the Eagles run that tush-push, brotherly shove on short yardage, Kelsey, the center, moves the ball forward. And I think he's been penalized a couple times for that. So now the league is looking really carefully to see if the center does that. And I did see a video on Twitter where you can see Hosa kind of move the ball up twice. Like he's, you know, shoves it up a little bit and then again. So that must have been what the official saw. And I don't know it well enough to know if that's commonplace or if that should have been a penalty. But I know Stefanski talked to the – you can read his lips – that he talked to the officials before the game. Like, we don't do that. That's not something we're looking to do. We're not sneaking it there. Like, he was adamant that that's – you know, that's not what they teach. That's not what Posick does. They weren't going to sneak there, so they're not caring about those 4 inches. If you're handing it to the quarterback and he's turning around, you know, that the center ball placement doesn't matter. Now, maybe he's just saying that, and maybe Posick was trying to get away with something there. But – I just thought it was interesting because there's such a big point in the game. Then they got a pass and they throw 2 incompletions. Rams get the ball back. The game's over because they score again. But he was adamant that they did not do anything wrong.
Yeah. All right. You ready to talk Jags?
Yeah.
The Jags are, I mean, this is incredible. I never would have thought they would have lost that game last night. We're taping this on Tuesday. Scott, I mean, you know, they were like a 10-point favorite. You know, no Joe Burrow. They had a chance to become the top seed in the AFC. And I know Trevor got hurt late in the game, but still they were struggling even while he was healthy to win that game. Shocking loss by the Jags.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you know, part of that is Jake Browning played so well for the Bengals, barely threw any incompletions. The Bengals ran the ball well. So, you know, to me that's, you know, issues with the Jaguars' defense. You know, I mean, they gave up 491 last night. Browning threw for 335, or the team threw for 335. Cincinnati ran for 156. It was a surprising loss for sure. Now, I think people in Jacksonville would argue Lawrence doesn't get hurt. Maybe they pull it out, right? And that's a fair argument, but it doesn't stop. It doesn't change the fact that, like you said, it was a close game. Their defense gave up a bunch of yards and points to a backup quarterback. I think they're a good team, right? They got 8 wins. They're a little bit vulnerable. It seems like, you know, they got a couple good wins against Houston, or they split with Houston. They beat Pittsburgh. So that's a good win. They beat Indy, so that's a pretty good win. They got blown out by San Francisco. So, you know, I don't think they're a perfect team, or they beat Indy twice actually. Not a perfect team, but when Lawrence plays, you know, they're dynamic. They can be dynamic on offense. He's a good player. They got a couple receivers. Their tight end's really good. They got a good pass rusher, and Josh Allen has 13-plus sacks this year. So there's some pieces there, but coming off a tough loss and with the Trevor Lawrence injury, it's going to be interesting to see how this week goes and how they handle it when they come to Cleveland next week.
Do you think he's going to play? I mean, I know we don't have the obvious answer, but when I saw that injury last night, I'm like, oh, there is no way he's going to play this Sunday with the way he, you know, smashed his helmet and fist right into the ground and needed help walking off. I mean, I thought that was going to be – and now, obviously, it's not as bad as it looked, high ankle sprain. And I know this is a tough guy. I mean, he's played hurt before.
Yes.
But I got to tell you you know, it would be a surprise if he was out there after seeing that injury, but maybe he will. But that's a huge, huge key in this game.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think the line I saw Sunday night, so before they played Monday night, I think the Jags were 3.5-point favorites. And then after the injury, I saw 1.5 this morning. That was before the Lawrence news. So I don't know where it settled. I'm sure it'll continue to be in flux depending on the quarterback news out of Jacksonville. But I'm with you, Chad. I saw it, and I assumed he wasn't going to play. The Peterson calling it just a high ankle, you know, nothing more, not putting a timetable on a return, not ruling him out, certainly leaves the door open. Now, you have to remember it's a short week. So he gets injured at about 11 p.m. on Monday night, and he's got to play at 1 o'clock Sunday. That's one less day to heal. It's one less day for all the therapy that, you know, the pro athletes do, and the, you know, the ice and the cryotherapy and all that stuff, right? So one less day of that. You got to get on a plane and travel. That's also, again, not easy. So I don't know. The fact that he's never missed a start in the NFL, okay, that if you're a Jacksonville fan, you go, okay, that gives you hope. It's a high ankle, so it's not like an arm thing. So maybe he can stand in the pocket. Maybe you do a bunch of shotgun snaps and he can get rid of the ball. I think it certainly – you would think would affect his ability to run the ball. And he's a good athlete. You know, they bootleg him, they move him. You know, he gets out of the pocket sometimes. He's rushed. He's had 56 rushes this year, 248 yards, and four touchdowns. So that's an element of his game, which you would assume, even if he plays, is not there. So, I don't know, right now I would say no, Chud, because he doesn't play. Because high ankle sprains are difficult. And we know that, and if you watch the league. The only reason I'm hedging it all is I got two reasons. One, remember when Deshaun Watson hurt the shoulder and he had the high ankle against Baltimore? He thought without the shoulder, he would have been able to play through the high ankle. Now, obviously, we don't know if he could have because the shoulder made it a moot point. I mean, he was still in a boot on the sideline that weekend watching, so that makes you think he wouldn't have been able to play, but guys are in boots a lot just for precaution and protection. And then Jerome Ford had a high ankle and played the next week this year, and he's a running back. I think it was out in Seattle. Now, he didn't play a ton, but he's a running back, and he moved okay when he got in the game. And it was less than a week. It wasn't the worst of a high ankle, but it was a high ankle. So I would never say never. I would lean toward he doesn't play. But that's obviously going to be huge as we continue to prepare for this game heading into Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt. Have you ever put your money on Beathard versus Flacco?
Right. Oh, my gosh. CJ Beathard, he's 30 years old. He's 2-10 as a starter. Last time he made a start was in 2020 with the Niners. Looked okay yesterday. Came in, I think it was 9-10 for 63 yards. But, you know, when you're trying to find these, I think we talked about this at the start of the show, when you're trying to find these wins for the Browns in the last five games, right? How can they get three wins? How can they get four wins? The other team having a backup quarterback is one way to do it. And the Browns, if Lawrence doesn't play, they could have a backup with the Jaguars, a backup with the Jets, right? Because I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to come back if they're out of the playoff picture, and a backup in Cincinnati. Doesn't guarantee anything, but it certainly gives you a better shot if you're the Browns, who, of course, are playing with a backup in their fourth starting quarterback of the season.
It just goes to show you, too, the schedule game. And we talked enough about this last week. But, I mean, just it's amazing how things change week to week. I mean, listen, the Bears look a little more difficult of a win after they beat Minnesota. And now you have, you might not have Trevor Lawrence. But then the Bengals game, which looked like, oh, they're going to win that at the end of the year. Now you have to start thinking, wow, they just beat Jacksonville. And, you know, their backup didn't look so bad. So, you know, it's just funny how this constantly changes every week.
It's amazing, Chud, and that's a great point. I agree 100%. We did talk about that last week. The other thing it reinforces to me, it's all about how you play on a given day and in the biggest moments, right? It doesn't always matter who you have. Guys get hurt during games. Guys get hurt and they miss a game or two or three, yet there's a ton of games that come down to the wire and are decided by a handful of plays, right? Even that Rams game last week, it winds up being 36-19. It came down to about three plays, right? The interception, the false start was a couple of them. The Browns give up a couple of big plays. So you can still win games without your best guys. Maybe you can't win a Super Bowl. Who knows? It's way too early to talk about that. But you can still win and compete if you play clean ball, you don't turn it over, you don't commit penalties, you play good defense, right? You do all those little things, and you make a couple of critical plays at critical moments.
Yeah, no question. Jacksonville is starting to play better, too. I mean, I know they lost last night, but, you know, if for whatever reason, during the year, even when they were getting wins, Lawrence in the passing game, it just wasn't on point yet. Yeah. It was, you know, they were kind of struggling a little bit, but they were finding some wins. But the last few weeks, they were starting to get their groove. So if Lawrence doesn't play, that's a huge break for the Browns, certainly. As we get in, I think it's prediction time, right?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Unless you want to do that trivia first.
Real quick. Yeah, let's do it real quick. Thanks for remembering. I think last time the question was 2016. Sashi Brown drafts four receivers. Can you name the four receivers?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so bad at trivia. Like, ask me something from the 19. Like, ask me the entire roster from the 1988, 87, 86 Browns.
You know what? I'm going to message Zach and tell him to give me some older questions. I hear you.
Oh, man. All right. Sashi Brown, the receivers. What year was it again?
16.
2016. I already guessed the wrong one last time, so I don't want to do that again. 2006. I'm not even going to try to waste time and take a stab at it.
You should know two of them. I got two, and then the other two I could picture, but I got their names wrong. So I kind of count that as a win. Corey Coleman.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Corey Coleman, right?
Gosh.
Bad first round pick.
You want to know why I didn't get that? Because I've totally put him out of all of my like brain thoughts and anything. Terrible pick.
Right. Rashard Higgins was the best of the four.
Okay. Yep.
And then it was Ricardo Lewis, who I always liked. He's a nice guy, big dude, never did anything. He battled injuries. He got hurt early.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jordan Payton, like a seventh round pick out of UCLA.
Yes. So
there you go.
Gosh, I am having flashbacks to being in the sports office in 2016.
Okay, right?
Yes, because now that I hear those, I gotta get better at my Browns team trivia.
All right, so here's one for next week, and then I'll tell him to give us some retro trivia.
Yeah,
Ben Roethlisberger went 26-2-1 in the regular season against the Browns. Who were the two starting quarterbacks to beat him? Think about that. I don't. I read this question and the answer did not immediately come to mind, so I'm gonna have to do some thinking on that too.
Okay. All right. That's a good one.
All right. So there we go. Finally squeezed in trivia. We've been too busy to do that.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. All right, prediction time. Let's see. Congratulations, you got it right last week. That bumps Petrak up to 8-4. I am 8-4 with the loss. So I picked the Browns. So you and I are both 8-4, and the Browns are 7-5. So I went first last time. So you get to take the first stab at it this time.
All right. I'm going to assume Trevor Lawrence doesn't play. That's factored into my pick. So as always, keep an eye out on Twitter as the week moves along. But I'm going to assume he doesn't play. I kind of feel like you did last week, Chud, where I think the defense rebounds after a tough outing. It's back home. That's good for the Browns defense. At least it has been. Maybe Denzel Ward plays. The Jaguars are missing Christian Kirk. So I'm going to go Browns 20, Jaguars 13.
Okay. All right. 20-13 Browns. Yeah, and I think you talked about the line. Well, I don't think. I know you talked about the line, and I saw it today. Let me look up. I can look right now.
Yeah, where did you see it end up?
I saw the Browns are now -3.
That's big. That's almost like a 7-point swing with Trevor Lawrence. Wow,
isn't that incredible?
Yeah,
it's like a touchdown swing.
Yeah.
I saw 2.5 Jags yesterday. So okay. You saw 3.
I thought I saw Saturday or Sunday night 3.5. Like those the opening lines, I could have sworn I saw it.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, that
maybe it was even 2.5, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to think if I'm surprised the Jags were a 2.5 or 3-point favorite on the road against the Browns. Are pretty good at home, but I mean, do I think the Browns are a better team? I'm not saying that necessarily, and the Jags could have been the top seed had they won that game. But yeah, it makes sense. So now the Browns are -3. I'm glad you brought up Christian Kirk. That's a huge injury for them with their receiving game. Because one thing about the Jacksonville offense is, you know, if you go and look, Calvin Ridley, he is much better when Zay Jones is out there. When they have three receivers, their offense is clicking. It's incredible. It's like, remember I told you the 49ers? I really believe Deebo Samuel is a huge factor in that offense to have to worry about him along with the other guys that they have. And when he was out injured, they were struggling a little bit. Now they had some other injuries as well. But I feel like the Jacksonville offense needs those three receivers to really be clicking. And that's a big loss to lose Kirk. I mean, he's a reception machine for Lawrence. So that's a big loss right there. And then if you take Lawrence out as well. So, you know, hey, we all know anything can happen in the NFL. But I'm going to side with you that the defense plays better. And I just think back at home. And I think this is a game the Browns need. I think if they string three losses together, that's going to really be tough then down the stretch with just then four games to go. Now you have to go. If they lose this one, right, we have 5 games left, then they'd have to go 3-1, right?
Correct.
So right now we're looking at 3-2. Not saying they couldn't do that, though, because this is one of the more difficult games left. But it is a home game. Yeah, they need to get this one. So. Yeah. I'm gonna go with the Browns, and I'm gonna go.
16-13.
Okay.
Browns, 16-13. Did you see the over-under? I'm
No.
Going to sneak. Yeah, take a stab at this.
Ooh.
Take a guess.
36.
Scott, right now it's 30.5.
Oh, my
30.
God.
30.5.
That's
yeah.
crazy low.
I know. It's incredible. So I'm going to go right around that area and go 16-13. That's the main reason why I'm picking that score is the over-under.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, I mean, that's a good score. You know, I mean, Joe Flacco in a second start, who knows what's going to happen. Jaguars got a pass rush. You know, we'll see if Jed Wills is back this week. I doubt it because it originally seemed like a six-week injury, but he has missed the mandatory four on IR, so we'll see if he practices this week, which would help, you would think, the pass protection and the run game. But, yeah, that's a good pick, Chad. I mean, right around that score, I like. And you make a great point about the receivers, the three receivers for Jacksonville. I think Troy Aikman mentioned that Zay Flowers, when he finally came back, that's when it took off. And then if you take Kirk out of lineup, which he's going to be out of lineup, it's back to just two again. That's big. That's big for them.
Yeah, Jones.
What did I say? Flowers?
Yeah,
Flowers. I get my Zays confused. Right? Zay Jones.
Yeah. You're heading to the Ravens.
My God, thank you, Chug. Yeah, no kidding.
All right, so let's hope we both come up big here with our prediction because we need it, man. We need this. We need the Browns to move to 8-5.
Yeah, that would put so much pressure on that Chicago game, right? You could feel it. You could feel the tightness if they don't win this one. So it's a big one. Obviously, it's a big one.
Yeah, good point.
So perfect. Hey, Chud, thanks as always. I appreciate it. I know you're back into sports for the last couple of days, so it's good to hear that. Good to see that, and then good to have you on here again as always. So thank you very much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.